Harder Knocks. You are now listening to Harder Knocks.
Knock on wood, if you're with us, Raider Nation, it is time for another episode of Harder Knocks, Training Camp with Hard Knocks, Training Camp with the Oakland Raiders. I'm Matt Walks, your social media manager.
And I am Kyle Martin, your lead digital content producer, welcoming you into this fourth episode, Matt. It's pretty exciting.
We're almost near the end of it.
It's crazy. I mean, it feels like it's flown by, but it feels like the Harder Knocks crew have been with us for a year now.
It does. It does. They're heavily embedded. They're here at 1220 in Alameda. We're excited to bring you another episode. We just finished watching episode 4 of Hard Knocks on HBO, and let me put it this way. A solid episode, I would say, but I don't know if I would go much further than that.
Yeah, I mean, it hit on the points that was intended to hit on, but out of all of the episodes, probably not my favorite. I think they, you know, continue to touch on a few things that we've seen the storylines develop further and further, but there was nothing groundbreaking to this episode, really, in my opinion.
Right. So let's get into it. Let's start at the top, where we had Coach Buckner give his opening speech and honestly kind of set a more grim tone than last week with Frank Caliendo, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Last week it was very lighthearted. You bring in a jokester. Gruden, you know, cracks a couple jokes himself. But as you said, this week, a little darker, a little more real. And I thought this was the best part of the entire episode, truthfully. I think it was interesting to hear Buckner, who's been one of the biggest MVPs of this entire show, give an empowering message to the guys, you know, like, stop taking this for granted. You're wasting my time. He also, I think it's interesting that in today's society, right, nobody wants tough love anymore. Nobody wants to be criticized. Look at what happened to Tom Izzo, right, with MSU. I mean, that was a little more dicey, a little more aggressive. But nobody, tell me I'm wrong. Nobody wants tough love
Boomer
anymore,
Boomer Kyle.
Right? Nobody wants tough
these
love.
These millennials, these kids just can't handle a little tough love.
It's so true, though. And to that point, he's trying to call everybody out because everybody needs some tough love sometimes. You need to be criticized. You need to be able to take it and elevate your game and realize, okay, maybe I am a little weak in this area. But I don't know. I took it this way. How did you feel about it?
Well, for the most part, I agree with you. I am a big believer in like the Steve Kerr compassionate leadership model that you don't need to destroy a person's self-image in order to build them up and lead them. Maybe that makes me a soft millennial. But so in that respect, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with you that everyone needs to be criticized, but I felt like Buckner didn't cross any lines in his criticism. I thought he was very even keeled. He even went out of his way to say, look, I love all of you guys, but I'm not in love with the way you're playing football right now. And the fact that he didn't point fingers, the fact that he spread the blame around evenly, and the fact that he issued that challenge and threw the gauntlet down to the whole group. Obviously, we don't see what happens in one-on-ones or anything that's behind closed doors that Hard Knocks doesn't see. But once again, I thought his leadership was on point and on display.
Yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying. And I think that's the key, is that he didn't specifically point to one particular player and call them out to say, hey, you suck right now.
Right.
And I that's my favorite part, is that, you know, because he says, I love all of you, but your football sucks right now.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just calling it like it is. At that point, you had two preseason games to go.
The storm's coming, Kyle.
He said, yeah, that's a great quote, too. That should be one of the quotes for this entire episode. It should just be, you know how the titles for each episode is just, what,
yeah,
episode 3,
yeah,
003? This one should be, the storm is coming.
Hope you built a ship.
Yeah. from there, it goes to a little bit of a more lighthearted area, right, with Luke Wilson as he prepares for his venture home to Canada. And he gets some ribbing because of it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that in the grand scheme of things, Luke Wilson probably didn't want to play as much, considering how that game implicated the 53-man roster and the roster bubble. But what a cool moment for him to be able to return home. And one of my favorite little back and forths in all of Hard Knocks is the internal wrestling that he's doing, trying to determine whether Drake or Wayne Gretzky is the bigger Canadian at the moment.
Yeah, because the Toronto Raptors has put Drake over the top. I know, we'll keep it, you know, very PG, right. But what do you think the worst thing Drake could do is, and people would just be like, you know, that's fine.
Oh, boy, I don't,
Do you think he could spit on the Canadian flag and get away with it?
What in what scenario would lead him to do this? Would he be renouncing his citizenship? Would he?
That's a good point. I don't know. I don't know what this hypothetical scenario is trying to present, but I think he could get away with tax evasion.
Okay, like one of those upper tier, higher elite soccer players that lets like their uncle run all their finances.
Yeah, Ronaldo's been popped for it like 8 times, exactly. And somehow he's never served any jail time.
Just get a money man, guy.
Yeah, it's not that hard, especially with all the money you have. You could kick a little bit towards an accountant.
It's right, but it brings up an interesting question, especially with Gretzky in the mix. We asked Luke Wilson, and I asked just about every Canadian I met in Canada, almost to the point of nausea, who would be your Canadian Mount Rushmore? And I heard a lot of different answers, from Pierre Trudeau to Terry Fox to John Candy to Bieber. Tons of people. Michael J. Fox was another one. So I would like to put a little American spin on it for you and ask, who would be on your American sports Mount Rushmore?
Okay.
So they have to be born in America.
Sure.
Doesn't necessarily have to be one from each of the four major sports. Just the four luminaries of American sports.
Okay.
Live on forever.
Off the top of my head,
sure.
I'm going to go Michael Jordan.
Classic. He's on mine as well.
Okay. We both have that in common.
Yep.
Michael Phelps, because just pure domination.
Greatest Olympian ever.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
Three, Muhammad Ali.
Yep. He's on mine as well.
Another dominant athlete. Yeah. And then Joey Chestnut. Just kidding. Bo Jackson. Few people came as close to being as dominant or as athletic as Joey Chestnut and Bo Jackson. No, just Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson was obviously a dual sport athlete.
Did he have the longevity, though?
But I think this is a bigger discussion.
Yep, absolutely.
But I'm making my four based off of pure athletic ability, freak athleticism, and dominance.
Yep.
Okay. Do you have the resume to back up that you were dominant?
Right. So I agree with you on Jordan and Ali. I think those are both pretty hard to dispute. I considered Tiger. I think his little fall from grace he's been chiseled off.
Mm-hmm.
I would put Babe Ruth on there because of his importance at the time when that sport was just beginning to take hold of, you know, the American consciousness. And I would say Bo Jackson never would have played for Kansas City if Jackie Robinson hadn't broken the color barrier. So I would say Jackie Robinson, Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali, Babe Ruth. But you bring up a good point.
I think they're all good picks, though.
Definitely. I would love to hear what Raider Nation thinks.
Yeah. Raider Nation in the comments of whatever tweet or
send us
platform
a tweet
you
at
find
MGWalks,
this.
At Kyle's feed, if you're listening. And surprisingly, you are listening. The numbers back it up.
Yeah. We have exceeded all expectations in my mind. So I'm happy to hear that this is taking off in a good way. Any publicity is good publicity.
That's right.
Not that we have any bad publicity, but this podcast is booming, baby.
That's right, Kyle.
We're getting a little off track here.
Let's
right?
get back on.
We'll reel it in. Still on the tight ends, though. I thought this was really cool to see a little bit more about Frank Smith, the tight ends coach, right? I think the season as a whole has really shown just how relatable some of these coaches are, Buckner, Gruden, and now Frank Smith. He's obviously chummy with the guys. He's one of the boys. But I think the biggest testament to his character is when he's sitting one-on-one with Darren Waller, telling him, look, man, you've overcome a lot just to be at this point. But then he takes it a step further and say, look, the mission is far from over, but just know that you have the support system here to make sure that you see through anything that you need to accomplish. And that's awesome to hear that from, you know, whether it's a friend, a mentor, your coach. I think it really just lets Darren Waller know that, look, man, there's other things outside of football bigger than this. So whatever you need, we got you.
Like Waller says, it's easier to stay clean when you have a support team around him. And I think he is fortunate to consider Coach Smith part of that team.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're talking about Coach Buckner and we're talking about Coach Smith, and those two both have cameras in their position group rooms, and not every coach on the roster does. And I think it's important to underline to people who have only watched Hard Knocks that there are high character guys across Coach Gruden's coaching roster, from Coach Wilson, the running backs coach, Kirby Wilson, to Edgar Bennett, the wide receivers. There are so many high character guys that provide and epitomize this kind of leadership that it's cool to see it from Coach Smith and Coach Buckner, but all throughout the coaching staff, there are guys like this.
Yeah, and it comes back to Coach Gruden, right? Because I think with a lot of things, it all stems from the top and trickles down. Obviously, he had to bring in all of these guys, but it's the mindset that they all share to make sure that the players know it's a brotherhood. This is literally your family. Whatever you need, we're here for you. And I think it's awesome that they kept that in this episode.
It would be so cool to see in 10 years where all of Coach Gruden's position coaches end up going. You know, how that coaching tree ends up forming. Because there are some guys, Coach Buckner, I can absolutely see him as a future NFL head coach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Hopefully, knock if you believe in that.
That's right. That's right.
Speaking of knocking, the next transition in this episode was a weird one, wasn't it, Matt?
Are you referring to the hip-hop Knock on Wood remix?
Indeed I am.
Oh, boy. DJ Grudog on the ones and twos. Let me tell you why I had a sort of an issue with this. Cool idea, cool execution.
Yeah.
I think we can agree. Anything with NFL Films footage over it is awesome, and I thought the music side of it was cool too. The problem I had with it is it felt so disjointed and out of place, and it just seemed to embody what made this whole episode just a little bit weird in my eyes. Like, it felt lesser than the sum of its parts, you know? It felt kind of disjointed, you know, obviously the first word that comes to mind. I felt like there's a lot of great ideas that they had to put here in episode 4, because there's only one episode left.
Yeah.
So it led to them chasing storylines or including segments that otherwise seemed a little just slightly off. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. All of that is pretty much what I would say. I think, again, it was creative. It was clever. But I don't know if the execution was the greatest. It felt out of place, and it just didn't belong.
On the other hand, one thing that Gruden did that I thought was pretty cool, and I actually did a little research into it. You saw it on social earlier this week, but his little parlor trick of counting backwards from threes from 100 to 0. I'm interested in if you're familiar with the origin of that.
No, I'm not. You briefly touched on it a little bit when he did it. When we saw it on social media, you came to me and you said, I'm going to do a little research on this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna find out more about it, but I don't know anything about it other than how many times he practiced it, why Gruden knows it so well.
Right.
And if it's something he does at every dinner party he goes to.
So counting backwards from any specific number, whether it's five, sevens, threes, it's called like serial counting, serial threes. And one way they're applied is to head injury victims. Like, you know, if you're a high school player and you get a concussion, back in the day, they would often give them these tests. Can you count backwards from 100 to 0 in threes and fives and sevens? And it would help them determine whether or not there was any injury, whether it be, you know, long-lasting or just in that moment. And so if I had to guess, I would guess that back in the day when Gruden was getting a start, coaching or even playing, this was probably something they gave players who had their bell rung to see whether or not they had a concussion.
That's interesting. You don't think it's because Gruden's testing his own sanity?
That could be that, too. Maybe he just, yeah, maybe every morning he wakes up and counts down and goes, yeah, I still got it.
Do you think it's harder to recite by threes, you know, counting down 100 to 1, or to recite the alphabet Z to A?
I think if you recite the alphabet backwards from Z to A, if you do it enough times or you learn it as a kid, I think that's a lot easier because it's just the same, you know, letters or sounds or phonetics backward. But I never learned that as a kid. I would find that much, much more difficult than counting backwards from 100 and 3s, 7s, or 5s. But I have a question for you because I did a little research online and I found a mini mental state examination that is given to players or people or anyone who's just suffered a fall or some sort of accident, and it tests their cognitive ability.
Oh, boy.
So I would like to apply it with you right now and determine whether you are alert, drowsy, or are suffering from any concentration difficulties.
Is all of the above an option?
Yeah, exactly. So first of all, do you submit to this mini mental state examination?
I guess I have no choice other than submit.
Okay, so we have a little score sheet here. First question, Kyle, what is the year?
2019. Does it matter how quickly I answer the questions?
It does not. No.
Okay.
No. But if you take longer, what is the season?
Summer.
What is the date of the month?
August 27th, 2019.
That checks out. We were just looking for the date. Well, what is the day?
Oh, it's a Tuesday.
It sure is. And what is the month?
August.
You're doing great. Where are we? Name the state.
Oh, California.
Name the county?
Alameda County.
Name the town?
Alameda.
Name the facility?
1220 Harbor Bay Parkway.
And name the floor we're on.
Second.
You're doing great.
That was just question one?
That was question two.
Oh my gosh. How many parts are these questions?
You're a third of the way through it.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to name three objects.
Okay.
And I want you to repeat them back to me. Okay?
In the order that you say them to me?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to name all three and then you recite them back to me.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. Apple, Citizen, Caravan.
Apple, Citizen, Caravan.
Okay. Repeat them again.
Apple, Citizen, Caravan.
Repeat them again.
Apple, Citizen, Caravan.
And repeat them again.
Apple, Citizen, Caravan.
Excellent work, Kyle. Everything's checking out so far. Next up is serial sevens. I need you to count backward from 100 by serial sevens.
Oh, my
You may
goodness.
Begin.
Okay. 100, 93, 86, 79, 72, 65. Oh, boy. 58.
Okay.
51, 44. 37,
yep.
30,
okay, you
23.
Can stop right there.
Okay.
Okay. Little shaky, but we'll... all right. Next up, I need you to spell the word world backward.
World backwards?
Mm-hmm.
D-L-R-O-W.
Excellent work, Kyle. Excellent work. Everything's checking out nicely.
This reminds me of when I got tested for ADD in high school.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it was a little more strenuous and a lot more questions and weird objects being thrown at me. Puzzles, mind games, but...
Did you pass that? Test?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I don't have ADD, for okay. those who were curious.
Now I need you to name the three objects I recited to you above.
Oh, okay. Apple, Citizen, Caravan.
Excellent work. Okay. I need you to repeat the following. No ifs, ands, or buts.
No ifs, ands, or buts?
Yep, that's all. It looks like you got a perfect score, Kyle.
I'm fantastic.
You are alert. Your mental state is... competent and healthy.
I'm ready to go toe-to-toe with Gruden in one of those.
You should.
Yeah, that'd be a good time. Did you try that on yourself?
I did not, because it's one of those things that it's hard to apply to yourself, because once you read it, you sort of know the answers.
Yeah, that was fun. I appreciate you asking me that. A little surprise for
yeah,
me playing
I think
a game.
I think that's where serial threes come from. So if you're listening, go home, Google mini mental state examination, and give it to your loved one and report back on how well they do. I actually thought spelling world backward off the top of your head would be tough, but you aced that one.
Piece of cake, brother. Do you think they make players in the combine take that as part of the Wonderlic?
Ooh, I think the Wonderlic is just...
No, I know, but like
SAT stuff. Oh,
yeah,
as part of like the mental battery of exams. It's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe next time we go to Indy, we can ask around.
You know I love Indy. It's a town very near and dear to my heart. Anyway, we digress.
We do. So let's get into Derek Carr's little moment of, I don't know how else to say it, but tough love, I guess.
You know I love tough love. I said it on the beginning of this podcast.
Yes, you do. And when it comes from Derek, you know, it obviously comes from the heart, and it is leavened again with love.
Mm-hmm.
But we're referring, of course, to the moment where it wasn't clear what exactly happened, because they didn't show the play that led up to it, but we're led to believe that Marcel Aitman either deviated from the route he was supposed to or tried to make a play and went outside the bounds of whatever route or practice they were running.
Yeah. They didn't run the play as perfectly as Derek would have liked to.
Right.
And so he approaches Marcel and says, look, man, I want to get that 100 out of 100 times. And Marcel saying, yeah, I know, but this is where we work, and then in a game it'll be perfect. No, no, no.
Right.
Take this opportunity to perfect it now so you know it'll be perfect.
Right.
Right? That's like studying for a test and saying, when I see this question, I'll know it.
Yeah.
I'll just know it.
Yeah.
Maybe you won't. Maybe you won't run that question.
Wouldn't
or that
you feel
play to perfection.
Better if you just did it? In
yeah.
The, yeah.
What does it take to go the extra mile to make sure that you're 100% from the field, right?
Right.
So I think it was cool to see Derek's leadership in that moment, because he references what Seawood would say to him, where he says, look, if we don't get this play right, this could make or break the game. And so to see Derek applying that now and see his growth over the years, I can't believe this is, what, year 6 for Derek?
Right.
It's pretty wild. I wish Steve Wood was still with us. As Eddie always tells us, he thinks he could still play, and maybe he could. But anyway, I think this was awesome because Derek was really establishing himself as the voice on this team, and I'm sure Coach Gruden will love to see that or hear that if he ever does. But he knows he's got a – I don't know if Coach Gruden's watching this show habitually, if he tunes in every week ready to go.
Yeah, but wouldn't you think that Coach Gruden sees enough examples of Derek showing
sure. – Yeah,
leading by example. I think it really hits the Raider Nation bingo card of mentioning Charles Woodson, Derek showing leadership. I mean, it's like the on-field coaching aspect that fans live for.
So after Derek has his leadership moment with Marcel on the sideline during practice, we transition into Kabinda, but I'll save that because I want to talk a little bit more about Kabinda as our behind the curtain. But they touch on, you know, him calling his mom, saying, "Mom, I got you some tickets to the Canada game. Can't wait to see you. Bookmark. We're going to get to it." After that, we go to the Singing Rookies, which, boy, it has been cringeworthy all season long.
Yeah, they say athletes want to be rock stars and rock stars want to be athletes, but I don't think any of these athletes are going to be rock stars.
I don't either. We saw Jonathan Abram sing "You Got It Bad," which got everybody a little bit involved. We saw Keelan Doss sing "My Girl." Not bad. At first, I thought it was going to start out a little rocky. They show Coach Gruden's facial expression, and I didn't know if he bought it at first, but everybody gets going. And then Alec Ingold, Tyler Romer, and Trayvon Mullen, not the best karaoke I've heard.
Yeah, I don't think Alec Ingold's was that bad. "Ain't Too Proud to Beg" is a great jam, and I actually felt like he got booed prematurely, but who knows what gets cut and what we don't see. Like, what did Josh Jacobs sing? What did Cleveland Furl sing? Like, these are some of the moments that we haven't seen.
Yeah.
So it's tough to see, you know, how they compare with each other. What would you sing at karaoke? What's your karaoke song?
I've thought about this
so much. I can't even imagine you singing at karaoke, to be honest.
Well, I'm not very good. I'm not a good singer.
I'm not either.
I think it would be a Bon Jovi song.
Oh, boy.
I think it would have to be Bon Jovi. Like, you know, "Living on a Prayer."
Okay. All right. That is a classic. You would get the crowd involved.
Like I said, you got to get people
involved.
I feel
like you got to have a pretty significant vocal range, though, to sing "Living on a Prayer," especially towards the end when he goes up that octave.
Sure, but that's the beauty of having people involved, because you can hold the microphone a little bit further away from your mouth, and you can let the crowd
like
sound.
Out.
I'm just telling you, it gets the people going, and I could get away with it because of that reason.
Sure, sure. You got to pick something in like a very simple register. Like I would sing "All These Things That I've Done" by The Killers.
Oh, okay.
Especially because of that part, like, "I've got soul, but I'm not a soldier," that always gets the crowd going. Or go with something country, because those are always a classic. "Friends in Low Places," or some George Strait
Red
or something.
"Red Solo Cup."
"Red Solo." Exactly, exactly.
It would be a good time. I don't know if I would want to participate in a department-wide karaoke session, because
it's true.
That would just be roast fuel for the next year.
And I even added those songs, the "Ain't Too Proud to Beg," etc. I added those to the official Harder Knocks Spotify playlist with every song that's featured in Hard Knocks, even if it was sung poorly by, you know, some of our rookies, added them on the playlist. So check that out on Twitter.
A very cool project that I like that you started.
Yeah, thanks, man.
After the good old rookie hate, not Gruden doesn't like hazing, right? So we won't call it hazing. But after the rookie ribbing, we get to see Antonio Brown in his dojo in Napa, in his hotel room, with a pile of fan mail. And I thought this was incredible, right? Because with all the times his name's been dragged through the mud, his name's been slandered by the media, it's cool to see how he's still a role model in the eyes of the kids, right? Because really, that's what it's about. Playing the game, setting an example. It's all for the next generation. And to have... So one of them is from a Seattle Seahawks fan who says, "Regardless of whatever team you play for, I will continue to support you." Some kids included pictures they drew themselves of them and AB as cartoons. I think this is awesome just because it shows how pure and meaningful he is to the fans that watch him.
I'm going to go the other way with it.
Oh, no.
I do agree with you that the way the fans embrace him is something unlike anything I've seen in my time here in terms of relationships between fans and a player.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing him pregame, spending time with kids, seeing him sign for everyone, seeing him at the De La Salle football game be embraced by a bunch of screaming teens, that's amazing. And it is a testament to how beloved he is by fans everywhere. But the male thing seemed contrived to me because every player on this roster, with the exception of some, maybe rookies or undrafted free agents, all of them get fan mail.
Do they, though?
I think they do, yeah. If you go down to the mail room right now at 1220, you're going to see a lot of fan mail for a lot of different players. And maybe they don't get it in the same volume that AB gets it. But to me, it just seemed like cherry-picking a couple letters and showing them on Hard Knocks. I'm not putting this on AB, but it just seemed to me like a contrived heartstring puller spotlight move that I didn't think the episode needed.
I could see that. Yeah, maybe it didn't fit. But maybe that's why I'm so taken back by it, is that I don't feel like people write anymore. I don't feel like people send fan mail anymore. I feel like that's a thing of the past. You know, it's like the same concept of if you were a kid and you got a cereal box, and with the cereal box, you had to mail something into the cereal company, and they sent you a toy.
How old are you?
I'm a kid at heart. I'm a kid at heart. But I just don't feel like that's a thing that you see much anymore, because people can tweet at someone. They can tag their handle. It's just not, I'm such an on this podcast.
I know.
Your true colors are really coming
exactly.
to life. But I wanted to ask you, because you seem like the kind of guy
sure.
that would write somebody a letter. Have you ever written one of your favorite athletes anything?
Favorite athletes? Probably not. I guess when I was growing up, I didn't trust the system
you
that if
trust
I
the postage system
well if I were to like mail something to like the Los Angeles Lakers, like in my head I didn't understand how that mail would eventually get to like Kobe Bryant or Magic Johnson or something. Like, I don't know their home address. I can't just mail them. I remember when I was probably 4 or 5, I mailed a letter to President Clinton, and I got like the standard stock embossed reply, you know, it's the young people of the future that will help shape this country. And when I was probably 10 or 11, I came upon a pretty successful scam in which I realized that if I wrote letters to local businesses, being honest about how old I was, but being dishonest about how much I loved their product and how obsessed I was with them, that I would often get packages in the mail from these companies with free stuff. So I wrote a letter to like Target's headquarters in Minneapolis and was like, I can't get enough of the bullseye. I'm a 11-year-old kid in Billings, Montana, and I love Target. And they sent me like a water bottle and coupons and a sweatshirt and stuff. And this is all a true story, by the way. And I wrote Baskin-Robbins a letter about how much I loved their ice cream and how I couldn't live without Baskin-Robbins ice cream, right? And I was at tennis practice the next day. And I was bragging about my criminal exploits. Not criminal, but you know, there's something dishonest. I didn't love Baskin-Robbins. I just wanted free ice cream. So I was bragging at tennis practice about my scheme. And I'm not making this up. My tennis instructor says, that was you? I work at the Baskin-Robbins. And not only are we going to refund or revoke your coupons, but I don't think you should come around there anymore. That's a true story. So my tennis instructor was like, you know, just probably 17 or 18.
Okay, I'm
glad
you clarified.
And like worked at the
Baskin
Robbins, and like on the side was a tennis instructor, you know, like one of those.
I'm happy.
It was at like a summer tennis camp. And so I was caught because I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And that was the end of my scam, because I felt so dirty afterwards. I felt like I'd been, you know.
You learned a lesson. You learned a valuable lesson that day, but I'm very happy to hear that this tennis instructor is not a 45-year-old who was teaching tennis and also worked at Baskin-Robbins. That would have made me really sad.
No. She was like, you know, an 18-year-old tennis instructor who worked part-time at Baskin-Robbins and was a part-time, you know, it was one of those things.
Got it. Okay. Nearing our
end. That's a true story.
I believe it. I'm not doubting you. I'm just trying to move this along.
Sure.
We can talk about Baskin-Robbins.
Let's get to the B block.
Okay, the B block. Behind the curtain. This segment, obviously, we shed a little light on something that we don't feel like got its due or the proper storytelling. And this week, I'm going to talk a little bit about Jason Kabinda, right? Because we
Absolutely.
Both agreed that this segment of the episode felt pretty bland. It felt surface level, and there wasn't much to it, right?
Yeah, it almost seemed like they had paid Kabinda and his, you know, it's obviously a very cool story. He remains on the roster bubble to some degree, and he needed to have a really impactful preseason game with his mom in attendance, it seemed like the stage was kind of set. But because this isn't scripted, you can't plan what kind of game Cabinda is going to have. You can't plan how, you know, how the season or the episode is going to go.
For sure. Like you said, he's definitely – one thing they got right is that he's certainly on the bubble. He's very talented. He has one of our – he was one of our key contributors in 2018. There's no reason why he shouldn't be in 2019. But the thing is that the whole point of his mom coming to the game, not just because he wanted to do a cool thing for his mom and have his mom there, but his relationship with his mom is very important to him. It's a bond that they've shared over whatever it is, right? They continue to stay in contact daily. She's his best friend. It sounds all very cliche, but it's so important to him to have her there. I asked him, you know, was that the first time your mom had ever seen you play? And he goes, no, actually, quite the opposite. My mom has seen me play all throughout high school. I don't think she ever missed a game. She came to a lot of my Penn State games, and she came to four or five of my games last year with the Raiders. And I think it's awesome that, you know, he spends a lot of his money flying his mom out to see him. And one of the things about his mom, fun fact, she's from Cameroon, which explains the accent. They're both fluent French speakers. Boy, that's a tongue twister, fluent French speakers. And he's just one of the coolest individuals to get to know on and off the field. I don't feel like they really told anything about Cabinda other than the fact that he's having his mom come to the game and he's on the roster bubble.
Yeah, I think if you were to take everything at face value from Hard Knocks, you know, you would see that he's had a pretty up and down camp. He got a lot of opportunity last season, especially down the stretch, and Paul Gunther's defense to run around and make plays along with Markell Lee and Nicholas Morrow. It'll be interesting to see which of those three linebackers stays on the 53 this year, whether it's all or none or some. But they didn't really get, I felt, the cherry on top of that narrative that they really wanted, because he had a so-so game against the Packers.
Yeah, I agree. It he made some tackles. It was fine.
Right.
But, yeah, like you said, there wasn't the icing on the cake for it. Just some, if he, God forbid, he doesn't end up making this roster, he'll be fine. He's an incredibly intelligent individual. And some of the things he's actually told Raiders.com through the, you know, the past year and a half about things he's been interested in is that as a kid, he wanted to be a video game designer.
That's cool.
Which I think is really, you know, as a big
absolutely.
Resident esports correspondent, that tickles me. And then he also thinks that if he wasn't in the NFL right now, he'd be on Wall Street.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. You guys know I try to be good about my finances, but I'm not sure I know nearly as much as Mr. Cabinda.
Sure. That's neat. I didn't know either of those things, actually.
And I just think that's a testament to this episode, right? There's so much more about them. There's so much more about all these players, but we didn't get to see or peel back the layers of Cabinda and his mom and everything about him.
I mean, part of it had to do, too, they had to devote at least some time to the bizarre field conditions in Winnipeg, which is something that we can touch on really quick. I don't think anyone really knew, even there in Winnipeg, really knew quite what was going on with the field conditions. Obviously, we knew that the holes left behind from the CFL goalposts had created some sort of issue in each end zone, but the NFL had reviewed and approved the field the night before. The Raiders had approved the field. I believe it was the Packers that didn't feel like they could safely play in each end zone, which led to the 80-yard field and the no kickoffs, and truly a unique, I think is a fair word to describe, environment for that game. So I feel like Hard Knocks had to give some sort of even nominal explanation as to why the pylons weren't in the end zone.
Yeah. To be honest, was that little turf patch in the end zone that much different than playing on the dirt in the Coliseum?
Oh, it couldn't have been. I would imagine that players would have rather played over that patched over dirt hole in the end zone than on the actual dirt of the Coliseum.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement on that.
Yeah.
But whatever, it is what it is.
Let's get into the two-minute warning here. This is where we wrap everything up, put a tidy bow on it, talk a little bit about our MVPs. I'll kick us off in that regard. I thought the MVP of this episode was Coach Gruden. I know you can make that case for every single one of these episodes because he's so dynamic and he really is the lead actor, the star of the show. But between his on-field banter, which is unlike anything else on that show, and his demeanor in the meetings, and quite honestly for me, his belief in Nathan Peterman and the little moment they shared in the locker room afterwards where he said, you know, this is some of the best football he's seen Peterman play since he was at Pitt, I got to go with Gruden.
I think that's a good pick, including the Hard Knock, the Knock If You're With Me remix.
Well, I can't hold that against Gruden. I don't know. That doesn't seem like it's his fault.
No, I just wanted to take a playful jab. Yeah. But I don't know. I think Gruden, you're right, is probably the key MVP here. I'm going to fall back on Brenson Buckner, though. I think his segment at the intro of the episode was the best part of the entire thing. I think his message, his empowering delivery, everything about it resonated with me. I don't know if that's because I'm an old man who likes traditional values and tough love, but that was it for me. That struck a chord, and I hope that, you know, riled up some of the guys to go out and ball in their third and fourth preseason games for the rest of the year.
Are you sure it wasn't Trent Brown eating his height and fruit by the foot?
Everybody's done that. It's hard to put blame on him for eating it that way because we've all done it. Everybody's taken the fruit by the foot, ripped it off, put it in a little ball, and then just tossed it back. But, yeah, that was a funny scene for sure. Good way to end it.
Absolutely. And that's a good way for us to end it as well. Raider Nation, thank you for hanging with us another week. On behalf of Kyle, this is Matt saying thank you again for listening. Thanks for watching Hard Knocks. Thank you for supporting us, supporting the Raiders. And we look forward to coming at you next week for our is it really going to be the season finale of Hard Knocks next week? That's crazy.
Our final episode of Hard Knocks, which is going to be crazy to, you know, maybe discuss a little bit. Thanks again, like Matt said, for sticking with us, Raider Nation. It's been a real pleasure so far. ¶¶